present a new way to think about how information flows in a quantum channel. The idea would be to think about to characterize this information by a set of observables. So first, let me remind you what the most general notion of observable is in quantum mechanics. So traditionally, one starts with a self-adjoint operator and then use a spectral theorem to get a complete set of orthogonal projectors. So those projectors P, do you see the hand? Those projectors P are projectors on eigenspaces of X, and alpha I are eigenvalues. So those alpha I's are interpreted as a possible value of the observable, and those projectors give the probability for those values to be actualized through this well-known formula. Now, what's really important about this observable is the family of projectors, because that's what gives us the probabilities. So one could just view the projector X as a way to code for this family of projectors, PI. And this picture can be generalized. We don't need those operators to be projectors. We can take a more general family of operators, which also define probabilities, well-defined probabilities for all state row. But we just need two conditions on the observable for this to work. They have to be positive and sum to the identity. So such an observable, such a more general observable, is called a positive operator valued measure. Because of technicalities for infinite dimension. But infinite dimension, we'll just view an observable as a set of positive operators, which sum to one. So now, if two systems are communicating in quantum mechanics and the information transfer is represented by a trace-preserving completely positive map, E. Trace-preserving and completely positive is just what we need for this map to send density matrices to density matrices. So the question I want to ask is, what can we indirectly learn about the source, A, by measuring the source, the destination B? So anything that we can measure on the source has this form. So it is the expectation value of some positive operator BK, which is a PUVM element. Now, this state rho B is the image of rho A under the channel. And it happens that instead of acting with the channel E on the states, we can instead act with a dual channel E dagger on the observables to get the same thing. This is just the Heisenberg pictures, observable evolved instead of states. So what this equation tells you is that that all the observables that we can effectively measure about the state A by doing a measurement on the state B have this form. That is, they are image of an observable under the action of the channel. So what we want to consider is all the PUVMs which are image of a PUVM under E dagger. And we hope that this set of observable represents the information which has been preserved by the channel, because it's all the observables that we can effectively measure after the channel has acted. Now, PUVMs are a rather complicated object because they are not just observables, but set of observables of various cardinality. So instead of thinking with PUVM, we'll just focus on PUVM elements. So any observable which is positive and smaller than the identity, well, smaller than the identity means that 1 minus the observable is positive. And any such observable can serve as PUVM elements. We already seen that they have to be positive, but also they have to be smaller than 1, because ultimately they have to sum to 1. So we'll just call this this set delta. They are also called effects. And to give you an idea of the structure of this set, it is a convex hull of the projectors. So it contains, in particular, all the projectors. No, the image of this set delta, of this set of effects under the dual channel, are all the effects that we can measure indirectly, as exposed in the previous slide. And it happens that if your POVM is made of effects in this image, then it is the image of a POVM. Therefore, this set E dagger of delta characterizes all the observables which are preserved by the channel. So this is what we are going to work with. We're going to work with this set and try to understand properties of the channel depending on, the shape of this set. So the simplest thing to think about at first is to think about all the projectors contained in this set. So as we've seen before, projectors are POVM element, element of sharp observables, of traditional observables. That is, observable represented by self-adjoint operators. So consider all the projectors in this image, that is, the sharp observables which we can indirectly measure on the source, on the destination, on the source by measuring something on the destination. One can show that all such preserved sharp observable, that is, all the sharp observable in this set, are also correctable. So what does it mean to be a correctable for an observable? It's just the same thing as for a state, but in terms of the dual channel. So we say that an observable here, P, is corrected by a channel R if the composition of R with the channel exactly conserve this operator according to this equation. So the term states that the result is that there is a single channel R. There's a single channel R which corrects all the projectors in this set. And in fact, the projectors in this set are the only ones which are correctable. So for sharp observables, correctability being conserved, being preserved in that sense, and being correctable is the same thing. It kind of makes sense because the information has been preserved, we can actually correct it and get back exactly what we had. Now, how does this relate to the more usual notion of error correction? To see that, look at the algebra which is generated by those projectors. So, if you take a set of projectors, then their span is an algebra. Because clearly, if you multiply two of those projectors, well, it's not totally obvious, but they do form an algebra. A set of projectors in the set is equivalent to an algebra. And there is a representation theory for algebras which says that any algebra, any star algebra in finite dimensional system can be written as density, as matrices which have this form. That is, they are all block diagonal, and each block is a full matrix algebra of dimension n1 times n1, or nk times nk, acting on one subsystem and acting trivially on the other subsystem. So this theorem gives us the whole structure of the set of sharp observables, which is characterized by this, this thing and which is also correctable. And it happens that all those, each of those subsystems, sorry, all of those subsystems happens to be a subsystem code according to the theory of quantum error correction. So this way to look at things just give us back the whole notion of quantum error correction and subsystem codes. So subsystem codes are generalization of are the active version of another subsystem. And what we have here is a bit more general, actually, because what the previous theories say is how and when we can correct a single of those subsystems. But here we can correct a bunch at once. So each of those sector or each of the subsystem represent a full some quantum bit. Sorry, this doesn't quite work. I have no keyboard. But now we can, because we can convert correct several of the subsystems at once, we can correct this algebra, and this algebra represents a sort of information which is half classical and half quantum. Because if each full matrix algebra, each subsystem code is a full quantum system, but the whole thing at once is a sort of super-selected system which has off-diagonal elements zero, meaning that there's no superposition between certain states. And so it is partly classical. So in a sense, this unifies classical error correction and quantum error correction. So this gives us a complete understanding of the structure of the projective observable in this set E dagger of delta. So consider a channel E. This channel can always be seen as coming from a unitary interaction with some auxiliary system. So here we start maybe I should use this. Here we start with a pure state, and for the auxiliary system, and it's interacting with our system, and then we trace out the auxiliary system, and this gives us back our channel. Now, instead of tracing out the system C, we could choose to trace out B, and what we get is a new channel between A and C. This channel is called the complementary channel of E. It is unique up to a choice of basis of the auxiliary system C. So, in a sense, it should be clear that this channel, this complementary channel, represents the information which, instead of flowing, staying inside the system, flows outside of our system or into the environment. So it represents the information which is lost in the system. So what's nice is that now we have, if we are given the channel E, we have this set which represents the information which is conserved in the channel, which is faithfully transmitted to the system B. But now we have this other channel, the complementary channel, which represents the information which is faithfully transferred into the environment. So something very interesting to look at is the intersection of those two sets, because this smaller set of observables represent all the information which is simultaneously accessible in system B and C. And it happens, one can show that the corresponding observable, that is, if you take the observable here, which, and the observable here, which, when measured, yield information about the same observable of A, they happen to be correlated, which is pretty natural. So we could use this this fact to try to understand, we could view this that process as a measurement. So we have a system AB, so B now is a future of A, where A interacts with our auxiliary system, and the auxiliary system is some kind of measurement device. And what we want to do is to learn about system A by measuring system C. So we've seen that what we learn is this set. However, the intersection is what we learn about A, and which is still valid in the system, because it is information which is still exists after the interaction has taken place. So, so one could view this information defined by this set I as the information that we've learned through this measurement, and which can be used for future prediction of the state of the system. So in a sense, it is what we've measured with a predictive power. Or you could also view it as what we've measured and that we didn't destroy in the system. Now, this set I is pretty easy to characterize when it comes to projective observables. This is because one can show that this set does not contain any sharp quantum information. More precisely, all the projectors that you can find in this set, which represent sharp observables, happens to commute between each other. So they do not contain any quantum mechanical properties. This could be a way to study, to explain when a quantum system appears effectively classical. So the idea is that the idea is to use this to formalize and to generalize the theory of decoherence. So the idea is that this system, this auxiliary system C, is now considered as the some kind of environment which is interacting with our system in a way which we do not control. And we only have access, we can only learn about our system indirectly by measuring the environment, by measuring the system C. And the combination of the two facts, as we see, give us a classical effective system. No, it is not as simple, because this is true only for sharp observables. There is quite a non-trivial information which is contained in this set in terms of unsharp observables. For those who know what that is, this set, in a sense, to generalize the notion of pointer states of the theory of decoherence. So let me give a few examples to make this a bit more clear. So the simplest example we can imagine is a control node gate between two qubits. So I will call system A the control qubit. So if the other qubit, we call the environment, starts in a state zero, then the evolution is given by this. So what the channel does essentially is to destroy the off-diagonal elements of operators. Now, in this simple case, it's easy to see that the information conserved flowing to the environment, conserved, and the information flowing to the environment are the same, and they are all the diagonal matrix, all the operators which are co-diagonal with Z. So essentially, the information that they represent is Z itself, because those are all the functional of Z. So we see that information about Z flows into the environment and is conserved in the system, and that's all there is. And this is a perfect measurement of the observable Z. We learn about Z, and we do not destroy the corresponding information. We can use it to predict the state of the system after the measurement, because it represents information which has been conserved. So this is well known, but now we can use this formalism to go further and look at observables which are not sharp. So an interesting example would be a channel which looks like this. So what we have here, so think about a single electromagnetic mode, for instance. And so those states are a coherent state of an harmonic oscillator, labeled by the eigenvalues of the annihilation operator. So this channel corresponds, in a sense, to the measurement of a POVM observable, of a coherent state of observable. So how could such a channel actually happen in nature? Well, one way to think about it is, suppose we have some electromagnetic field, and we send wave packets through the field, and then try to infer properties of the field by measuring those electrons. Then if one does that, in some approximation, one can show that each electron will carry approximate information about a different combination of the field space variable, because the field is moving and rotating under its own Hamiltonian. And one should get an effective channel on the field which corresponds to a coarse grain phase space measurement. So not this exactly, but you could view this as an idealized case of such a channel. So the idea is that we learn unsharp information about which are localized about phase space variables. So here clearly we want to study the electromagnetic field, and we learn about it indirectly by looking at electrons which interact with the field in a way that we don't have control on exactly. And so if we apply our formalism to this, so I just rewrote the channel. So for this channel, it's one can see that one can show that the information which is conserved, well, all the information that is conserved happens to be also transferred to the environment. So this makes it computing the intersection simple, because the intersection is just the smaller set. so all the information which is preserved in the channel. So what does this set look like? Well, it's what it looks like. We can read it off directly by looking at this. So this is the image. So the operators in there are all operators of this form where A happens to be an effect. So A is a positive operator. So this set is made of positive linear combination of coherent states. To understand it better, it's easier to go in the dual picture and to think of states. So in this case, it's easy to, because we can always characterize a set of observables by a dual set of states. And here, the dual set of states is just the image of the initial channel E on the state of density matrices. And the dual channel is just the one you get by inverting those two cross operators, and it's the same channel in this case. And so we can see that because if A is a density matrix, those things are positive and actually probability distributions, then we see that this set I is characterized by all convex combinations of coherent states, which is as classical as can get for an electromagnetic field, for instance. So we see that this scheme may describe the emergence of an approximately commuting phase space. So this happens through two mechanisms. One mechanism is the fact that the uncontrolled interaction limits this possible state of the system. And also, we obtain a limited information about the system. And those two facts play together to give this effective classical system. So that's all. Thank you. No, it's not. Well, it has to be a finite dimensional algebra because it's much more complicated in infinite dimension. Sorry? It has to be a finite dimensional algebra.
Yeah. But that's like if you have a very small C-star algebra, then you find a representation, and it's always going to be a full matrix algebra in tensor.
It's always a direct sum of full matrices algebra. So the whole. No, it's not. It's a direct sum of full matrix.
Yeah.
So it's not a full matrix.
No, okay, no, I agree with that, but in your direct sum.
Yeah. You always can get down to an actual full matrix algebra. But it may be just the complex numbers, so it might be trivial, right? So it contains the case of classical algebras, which are just commutative. So in that case, it's pretty diagonal, and you only have a choice of number on the diagonals. So each full matrix algebra is just a 1 times 1 matrix, which is not really a matrix. Yeah, so it's new results that we get. It's in this article. So normally you I didn't go too much into detail, so I simplified a bit. I was cheating a bit. I simplified this equation. So what you really have is that to get as general as at least as quantum error correction, you need to allow to restrict this on some particles on some subspace of states. And so in that case, you can view subsystem, in this framework, you can view subsystem quantum error correction as the cases where this algebra has only one factor, right? And the case of standard quantum error correction is a case where not only is there only one factor, but it acts on the full subspace. It doesn't act trivially in some part. So this is more general in the sense that we now have the full matrix. We can usually no use any algebra. And so we can correct this whole thing at once. So what does it mean? It means that we correct some kind of hybrid information. We cannot have bigger codes because if I can correct this with this framework, then you could also correct this one with the subsystem codes. But by just correcting this one, what I mean also is that you would have to restrict your state to this, to the corresponding subspace for this to work. Whereas here, you don't need to restrict the state to that subspace. You can just restrict to the subspace which is on which this whole algebra acts. So you don't get high bigger codes, but you might get simpler correction algorithm. I don't know that. And also, you might need less restrictions on your states. But it's mostly interesting from, and it unifies with the classical error correction, because when this thing happens to be diagonal, then you're just doing classical error correction. So it's interesting from the, it unifies the point of view. Well, the real difference is that because I'm taking the point of view of the Heisenberg picture instead of because I'm looking at observables instead of states, it's easier to think about the subsystem because it just depends on the form of the algebra. So you could do everything in terms of states, but it wouldn't be obvious to you that you can do that. It's more obvious in terms of observables. So you could take your subsystem codes, but you see, if you talk in terms of subsystem codes, you have to say, okay, I decompose my Hilbert space into subsystems in an artificial way, and then each subsystem I act on it non-trivially, and I act on the other complement trivially, and then I have to take direct sums of them. So you have to construct all this framework, whereas here I just say, I'm looking for the largest algebra I can correct. And the largest algebra happens to be a general algebra, and it could have this form instead of just being one factor. I'll try. Okay, so what I mean by sharp is any observable that you could give through a self-adjoint operator. That is, it is defined in terms of projectors. So so here, general POVM is a set of positive operators, AI, which don't have to be projectors. But you can show that whenever they are all projectors, then they also have to be all orthogonal to each other. And therefore, whenever they are projectors, they define a self-adjoint operator of this form. And that's what I call sharp observables, are observables of this form. That is, which is equivalent to all observables which are made only of projectors. No, I mean, I'm considering a single POVM, and I call it sharp. So a POVM is made of a set of operators. I call it sharp if all those operators are projectors. Is that not what? No, they are not projectors because they are times a scalar.
Oh, okay.
That's the point. So if they really are projectors that the square is equal to itself, then they have to be orthogonal. Like what?
Rank 1. So do you really mean a projector?
Well, no. I mean, rank 1, rank 1 states correspond to, rank 1 projectors are projectors, but if you multiply them by a scalar, they are not projectors anymore.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't call the trine sharp. I will not call the trine sharp. It's also the case for the channel I showed, which is made of current rank one particles and current states. They're actually, well, it's more complex because you have an integral, but this is not sharp.
Yeah.